Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Aloha and thank you for joining me. We're at talk808.com. If you'd like to join us, give us a call, 808-782-6627. 808-782-6627. We'll be adding new lines in the very near future. Anyway, lots to talk about, you can go to carolcox.com and pick up all. There's about 1,400 hours of shows regarding various subjects here in Hawaii and other places that we've put together in the past years on KWAI 1080 AM radio station, which is now still up and running, revamped, and we'll have to check in on them and see how they're doing. But anyway, there is so much to talk about, and I gotta ask for an early apology or a tolerance on your part of me, because some of the things I may say or how I say them might be a little disturbing. So if you are a true liberal and you are offended by certain things, then you're listening to the wrong. You just change your phones or do something else. If you're right wing and you like to hate and do all of that, you're listening to the wrong show, and we don't try to spread hate or distrust in government or anything. What we do is try to point out what is broken and hopefully it is fixed. So if you have opinions and what have you, keep them to yourself or tell them to your friends, because we're not really interested, because our intentions are good. And everyone will make a mistake here and there, but it's never intentional, especially to spread hate and all of those ugly, nasty, mean-spirited things that we see flying about. But speaking of ugly, mean-spirited, nasty things, how about this Red Hill oil fuel facility? Man, we'll call it the Red Hill Tank Complex, depending on which angle you're coming from, or the Red Hill Bulk Fuel Storage Facility. So there's so much to talk about, but let's share with you, let me share this with you first. You know, there's a state health department, and I just got to tell you, it's deception. It's deceitful. That agency and whoever structured it is guilty of a crime against humanity. It can't function right. It won't function right, and it never will intended to be functioning right in the interests of the people. They don't fund it properly. It's politically influenced. You get unskilled people heading it. You get manipulation of placing people in. This right now we have Dr. Bruce Anderson, who was once head of it for a while, and then he retired or stepped out or went away, and now he's back through the back door, the front door. And so there's just and keeping in mind this is an island community, and I understand that and appreciate that. It's a small town. A small town with big needs and big issues. And you can either be consumed by those big issues or deal with them. You know, just to give you a little sidebar here. The Department of Navy Pacific Division, Naval Facilities Engineering Command, at Makalapa, Pearl Harbor, is actually the people who handle oversee much of this Red Hill concerns and all. Our governor's name is David Ige. There is a Miss Darlene Ige that is the Naval Facilities Engineer. And now it's not to say that she's done anything wrong or anything, but when you hear what's going on, you have to ask yourself now, how did we get here? how are we still talking about leaks and leak detections and questioning if there are leaks or what have you. So what I'm going to do today is I've attempted to do it before and think I did a decent job. But I went back and did some research, and I want to share with you this one thing so we can get off on a good foot. Although the facility, this is from the Tank Preventive Maintenance and Leak Monitoring Program. It was conducted and put together in January 2008 for the Red Hill Buck Fuel Storage Facility Groundwater Protection Plan. Although the facility, UST's underground storage tanks, and investigative and are deferred from any of the state and federal regulations, including the requirement for release detection. Hawaii Administrative Rules Title 11, Chapter 281, Subchapter 5, Release Detection. Deployment of a reliable leak detection system would reduce the potential for a chronic release to the Red Hill sub-basin. The impact of the future chronic release of a fuel over a prolonged period of time would eliminate 4.5 million gallons per day to 16 million gallons a day of potable water from the PH Pearl Harbor water system, which would severely impact the U.S. Navy mission in the Pacific. Be extremely difficult and costly to remediate in accordance with the HDOH, Department of Health, UST regulations. Remove the Red Hill sub-basin as a source of potable water for an undetermined period of time. Although there is currently a network of 3 groundwater monitoring wells within the facility, these wells are only sampled every 3 months, and each monitors approximately 200,000 square feet of water, a water table beneath the facility. A release from the Tank 12 could potentially impact an area of the water table of 150,000 square feet before being intercepted at well number WO2, RHM-WO2. At Tank 6, for these reasons, it is clear that every effort must be made to ensure that these releases do not occur. And this will be accomplished by instituting a rigorous maintenance schedule and continuing effort to identify and implement state-of-the-art release detection procedures. Now, this was done in January 2008. Here it is 2019, and we just were informed that there won't be any real changes. So what is happening here, and I'm going to try to lay it out for you, the Navy is about as criminally influenced and motivated as anything we've ever witnessed. They never have, the tanks are deferred from any of the state rules, and they've made a declaration that the state, that the military bases are a sovereign entity, does not fall under the jurisdiction of the state. So it's just a good old boy gathering and chewing the fat when they got together. And so that explains why, as we recovered in the records, that the records were piled up and stacked up and placed on the desk at the State Health Department and never viewed. And then in the viewing, we received documents that indicated that every quarter, the Air Force or the Navy was supposed to file a report. And for 21 quarters, they did not file reports. So all this gobbledygook about how great and how fragile and how sensitive and how important this water table is, the behavior that we witness here in these documents, and we're going to lay them out for you, just they don't jive. So I want to share with you one other letter here, and all related. This is to Darren Uchima at the Navy Regional Hawaii Office, Regional Environmental Department, Naval, NAV 465. Red Hill Tank Complex, the letter says, and this was written on 2004, June 10th. During the telephone conference between representatives of the Department of Health, the DOH, and the Navy on December 11, 2003, a number of issues were discussed, including documentation requested in DOH's letter of October 10, 2003. To date, has not received the requested information from the Navy or the required quarterly progress reports. Now, we boxed ourselves in the corner. We, the state, and the Board of Water Supply, I know they're crying now that they're not being treated as equals and what have you. But just complaining and pissing and moaning is not going to get it, clearly. Hadn't gotten anything accomplished over the years. So, folks, what we have here is people drawing big salaries, talking in all the Halloweenish kinds of scenarios they're pointing out to you, how frightening it is, and the Google, you know, the ghosts in the back room and this and that, and how dangerous it is, and what an irreplaceable resource we have, and how important it is, our aquifer. But the behavior that you witness in these documents, and mind you, these documents were obtained through FOIA or UIPA, Uniform Information Practices Act, which is a state side of the FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request. Now, listen to this, and listen good, because I'm going to try and share with you why, when you see the newspapers just glancing over the issues and on the periphery, discussing it, not diving into it and calling people what they are, liars and cheats. The first confirmed underground storage tank, UST, underground storage tank, released for the Red Hill facility was reported on October 28, 1998. Since that time, two additional confirmed releases have been reported and logged. Under the UST laws, the Navy should have submitted 21 quarterly progress reports. DOH has received none. Isn't that consistent with the fact that they've already told you, go pound sand, we're sovereign, your rules, we're deferred from your rules, your rules don't apply to us, but yet the DOH goes and sit and have meetings and have private meetings. And then when the public come and may offer support or let the Navy know that we're not going to take this nonsense, the DOH become more complicit in concealing information and having private meetings and be, you know, and then picking and handpicking a task force to further conceal the truth from the people. So remember now, this is an official letter, June 10th, 2004, to Mr. Darren Uchima at the Navy Office of Environmental and Engineering. And it's written by Mr. Stephen Chang, who's reminding him, hey, you guys aren't giving us any records, man. Quarterly reports. And I'm going to give you some explicit information that's gleaned from those reports and show you how important that it is. But you don't hear any lawsuits. You don't see any legal challenges from the state. You don't see anything. So passive. My cat and my dogs lay down, and this is it, when I read the paper that the DOH has provided me, I can't discern whether it's my dog or them rubbing their underbelly, and they're just as happy that they're the pooch for the military that sits there, and as long as they get their bellies rubbed and they get to go to meetings and what it looks like they're doing something, but they have no teeth. So, or if they have teeth, they're not biting with them. So you heard that 1998 was the first reported spill. So I went back and pulled up the records and under the Tank Preventive Maintenance and Leak Monitoring Program. And in that document, it talks about tank activity, and it breaks down each tank. Now, you know that there's 20-some tanks, 20 tanks at 12.5 million gallons of diesel fuel, jet JP5, whatever. At given time, it varies. But data from the modified API inspection reports and existing written site histories are summarized here. In addition to actual leaks from the tanks, it should be noted that in some cases, reported leaks in histories were leaks into the telltale system pipings itself, which are internal to the tanks and were not external tank leaks. Now, that's gobbledygook. We're looking for a spill or leak that got into the environment or got in the substrate or the aquifer beneath the facility. That's what we're concerned with. So try and discern this as you hear it. So on August 1953, this is Tank 1 activity. Leak found to telltale no, number 7. And crack found in tank during cleaning. No indication given of leakage rate. 864 to 967. Various leaks from telltale unknown quantity of leakage. You get this? Now, they've already assured us that the first leak was 1998. This is the bull that they're spreading, and we're consistent about it. 870 to 472, unexplained fuel drops amounting to 31,294 gallons. But yet, 1998, they're declaring, was the first spill. But then you have to read closely and it says reported spills. So that's suggesting that if you read the bones as I do, that they had spills and they didn't report them. Or they had spills and reported them and then it just didn't matter. So 575 to 878 unexplained fuel drops amounting to 32,765 gallons. Now remember, they pissed and moaned and jumped with joy to be able to tell the public, we lost 27,000 gallons of fuel in September 2014. But yet, not a whisper when it was 31,000, 32,000. In 1081, tank modernization repair project starts. 782 to 183, leak test results and fuel drops amounting to 5,517 gallons. And that was the end of history for Tank 1. Tank 2, 1047. Telltale leak noted. Unknown amount. Tank emptied. Now you're going to empty 12 million gallons of final leak and yet you don't report it to the public? 1281. Tank removed from service for repair and lining. Why would you do that? If it's working and it's not leaking, why would you remove it for repair? well, okay, I give up. I would say maybe the walls were thinning, and so it was precautionary measures they were taking. I'll give them that. But it didn't claim that. Tank three. 353 to 1281. No leaks reported. Tank four. No leaks reported from 153 to 483. Tank five. That's the old famous one, huh? 365. Telltale leak at 1 gallon per 1.25 hours. Tank worked on intermittently for 6 months, but no leak found. Suspect leak, telltale system. Now, the telltale system is something they try to explain, but we're talking about the migration and the accountability and all of that of the few. Where is it? And I'm suggesting to you that continue to listen to this, and you'll learn that while some places they are not admitting their leaks, we'll show you later in certain documents the detection of these constituents of contaminants that are of concern that are in the water and in the basal aquifer, or the aquifer itself under the facility. 272 to telltale leak at 2 quarts per day, response uncertain. Tank 6, 663. Problems with telltale system, no clear indication of external leak. Dates. Tank 7, 1173, telltale leakage, tank emptied. Leak may have been internal only. 578, significant telltale leakage, tank emptied. 280, after filling leak rates measured at approximately 6,505 gallons, leakage measured until rate dropped to less than 13 gallons per day, below 7207 fill level. Tank removed from service for repairs and put back in service in history. So the debate now is, what should they do? And some argue, take them out, take the tanks out, remove them. Given all that we know now, the tanks should be removed, and we should use another system or some above ground storage tanks or whatever. Where are they going to be placed? Or again, it's important to have few storage facilities. I'm not knocking that, and you've got to have fuel to drive your engines and your boats and your planes, and again, that's not a debate or concern with me. But 458 to 558 for tank 9. Tank 8 had no leaks reported. Approximately 1,500 gallons leaked from a telltale, and then 496. Report of a hole found under middle pipe support for 18-inch line. No details provided. 778 to 281, tank repair project and installation of telemetering system. Leak test rate after project ranged from 4.5 to 17.9 gallons per day. No documentation of any actions. You see how reckless and just how willy-nilly they're doing this. Can't even find records. They have leaks. So the bottom line is, what can we trust? Or who can we trust in dealing with this? Tank 10, 173, suspected leak, tank emptied. 476, telltale leak, tank emptied and removed from service. 1078 to 480, tank repair project and installation of telemetering system. 181, during refill, a severe leak detected somewhere near top of tank. Fuel ran out on the concrete near first platform on stairway to top of dome. Tank emptied. Started refilling tank after repairs. In history. That's tank 10. Tank 11. 98980. Leak testing after repair and upgrade rate. Rates from 165 to 2,412 gallons per day over 1 month. Based on these valued estimates, fuel loss between 10,000 and 20,000 gallons. It doesn't sound like that earlier letter that said the first reported detection, the leak was 1998. Maybe I'm wrong. Tank 12, 164, reported that there is a known leak in the dome section. No other information. 873, tank emptied, suspected leak. No additional information given. 281, leak testing after repair and upgrade showed leak rate at 1,400 gallons per day. Unknown amount of leakage. Tank was removed from service for a second time for leak repairs and of end of history. Tank 13, 576, leak reported, no details. So are you getting the seasick feeling now that you really can't trust anything that is being said either from the health department or the Navy of what is going on? Because you see these leaks, but then there's no documents, and these are official assessments being made and conducted and evaluations and and the required responses, and there's no documents. So they just say anything. Oh, yeah, we took bubble gum and patched it up, man, and it's still, see, it worked. I think that I personally, maybe it's a little too late now, but I personally believe that a criminal complaint should be filed and investigated for crimes, because we paid the boogers to sit there and do the work, so they can't say that we overworked them and wanted something for free. But dereliction of duty, lying, just pushing things aside and omitting. But tank 15, tank leaked badly upon refilling after tank repairs and lining, no details. 881 to 1081, removed from service, repaired leak, test still showed leak, and repaired again, end of history. And then they say, well, the water isn't, it hadn't gotten in the water yet. It hasn't, the wells that we have, you try and follow that garbage that they've been disseminating, you would understand, you'd share my feelings and sentiment. 748 for tank 16. Leak reported, no details, empty tank, telltale leak, lost 2.25 in 11 days, approximately 11,000 gallons. No additional information. 1249, tank refill, lost 3.63 in 4 days, approximately 18,000 gallons. No information on when leakage was stopped. Telltale leakage at one drop per 20 seconds, no additional information. One drop per 20 seconds, so you figure 60 seconds in a minute, and so 3 seconds, one drop, add that up, and you may not think it's nice, but when it's coming out of a 20 million or 12 million gallon tank, it adds up. Tank 16 continues, 1081, tank refilled after repairs and lining and found leak badly. 1181, tank removed from service. 1281, tank reworked and returned to service. End of history. Well, that doesn't sound like the first confirmed underground storage tank release for the Red Hill facility was reported on October 28, 1998. Since that time, two additional confirmed releases have been reported and logged. Now, these are documents produced by the Navy, and this is a Navy employee writing this nonsense. So why were he able to get the information, and why didn't he reference these documents that I'm referencing? His letter was written in 2004, and he was responsible for overseeing, and these, as we hear the letters, the dates that I'm reading off is 1081, so these records were already in existence. Tank 17, leak reported by Galga. Telltale leaking at 1 gallon per 1.5 minutes, fuel transferred. Telltale started leaking, no additional information. Tank 18, no leak reported. Tank 19, 664, leak discovered around well in tank bottom, 5 milliliters per hour. Other small holes discovered during inspection, rewelded. 1998, back seepage, quote, was observed from holes in steel liner during a tank and maintenance project. So, doesn't sound like the first leak to me. Now, if you have a question and concerns or want to share your thoughts on that, give me a call at 782-6627. Of course, 808 is the area code. This is the Carol Cox Show on talk808.com. Go to carolcox.com, and you can look at many of the shows that we've had or listen to them. We also run shows on Olelo on Sundays and Thursdays. So Olelo is community TV, channel 54. I encourage you to support that by, if nothing else, by just watching a few of the shows, not just my shows, but other shows. They have religious shows and community shows and just quite a few things. And while it may not have the big shiny lights behind every show, these are people that work hard and try to bring attention to community concerns. And it's helpful because you can't get free airing. And you can't be guaranteed to get any airing on commercial TV. So I'm going to continue in that vein of earlier. And let me just sort through some papers here. Apologize for the noise on the other end if you're listening to this. But it's a seasick feeling, as I say, to have to go in, read documents that say, oh, yeah, we have some serious problems here. And then you you see these problems, they don't fix them. And when they don't fix them, they contaminate the water. Now, I'm also going to talk in the next hour about the Red Hill oily waste pit and another occasion of example of lying, cheating, and stealing on part of the State Health Department and others. It's apparently they live in that old world where if you had an objection or had a comment or had a view of something, they would challenge you by saying, are you a PhD? Do you have a PhD in this? Do you have a degree in this? No, but I can read. And it says that when you say that there is no spills, and we come across documents that say there are spills, what do you expect from us? Are we supposed to lay down and just give in and accept, be spoon-fed what it is that you want us to be fed? So it's just so unfortunate what they will do. I'm going to take a break here for about 5 minutes and take a break and play a little music. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show on talk808.com. Appreciate you joining us. If you'd like to talk with us, give us a call, 782-6627. 808 is the area code. But continuing on from where we were talking about leaks and tanks and whatever. So you heard me ramble through that list. But what does that really mean? There's a couple things that looms over us, that strategies or tactics. If it's related to the contaminants, they say, well, we haven't had, as you see, the letter says, he's writing a letter informing the public that in the state that there's only certain leaks that occurred, and that's not accurate, as you hear the list that I read off. Knowing that the public is not going to have access to those documents because they were hidden on the desk. And I initially said they were inadvertently placed under the desk and overlooked. But if it's your job to receive quarterly reports, and as you see the letter written that you haven't received the quarterly report, so once you get those quarterly reports, you're supposed to report them or put them out. So there's some hanky-panky going on here, but again, no harm, no foul. And who's going to police you anyway if you're sovereign, if you're the military, and your stance is that you're sovereign, and that all your facility tanks are all deferred from the state law and from law. So what have we been dealing with all these years? So what this means, folks, the uglier side of this is that when we read that there was a leak in the tank and you're probably going, okay, so what's the big deal? Well, now there's this thing where they tell you, look, we have detected contaminants in the soil and in the water beneath the facility. But it's at safe levels. You get that? It's at safe levels. Mm-hmm. So kind of a switcheroo here. We weren't having leaks and we were silent about it, but we were having leaks, but we concealed it. And we weren't making any reports, and we were detecting contaminants in the water, but we weren't submitting the required reports, quarter reports. And the person that we're required, mandated to report them to or provide the reports to, didn't piss and moan and raise any issues either. So it's basically complicit, either by default or their fault. So again, I say, what does this mean? And I apologize for talking in a circuitous fashion around in circles, but I want to hold your attention to this because you heard me read about Uechima, Darren Uechima, and this is, it's painful. When I read this, and I hope you can experience the same disgust that I do. These reports would have told us in a timely fashion if they were quarterly reports, but they weren't submitted. And if we were told the truth that the tanks were leaking way back and we had spills and a million gallon spills here and there and what have you, it would have given us chance to deal with issues then. But then if it's sovereign, but how does one accept the argument that the Navy is sovereign when it's polluting our groundwater, our aquifer, one of the most important resources of water that we have? This fuel facility threatens it, and yet we can't get the truth and get to be told the facts. So what would be found in those reports, the quarterly reports, you might ask? So let's take a little stroll down through here and show you. I read you the leaks that they claim weren't happening or didn't disclose publicly. Here is a letter from the Department of Navy dated August 6, 2013. Red Hill Tank Complex, second quarter, 2013, quarterly groundwater monitoring. Inside tunnel wells, facility, ID number. You see, each time a spill occurs, it's called a release, and you get a release number and what have you, a release ID. Environmental Science International, Inc. collected groundwater samples from five wells at the Red Hill Fuel Storage Facility on April 22nd and 23rd, 2013. The groundwater samples were analyzed for petroleum constituents. The results. Laboratory analytical results indicated that TPHD was detected in the groundwater beneath the facility at a concentration that exceeded DOH drinking water EALs, environmental action levels for human toxicity, and the DOH groundwater gross contamination EAL. TPHD. The gross is would be about 4,500, I guess, or that would be the site-specific risk-based level. But jargon, word game, I'm only concerned with you failed to tell me that they were leaking, and you failed to tell me and disclose in a timely fashion that there's the water is contaminated and you concealed it. No other debate. And so they catch you and they sandwich you between you have to be skilled at knowing the milligrams per kilogram and parts per billion and all of that. No, I read that the water was sampled and it has contaminants exceeding the levels. And when you say exceeding the environmental action levels, that just simply means that the Department of Health can change them like that. Snap of the finger and come up with a risk-based assessment and analysis and tell you, oh, yeah, it's okay. Well, we think that, you know, I am so sick and tired of this gamesmanship of numbers and when, in fact, clean water, clean air, clean land is a right of ours. And to minimize that right or to encroach on that right by saying, well, we have a standard here and we can tolerate that standard, but we found the water to be pure and natural, but now our activities have contaminated it. So therefore, you have to live with it and then understand the science and the math in order to hold a decent conversation. That's just bogus. So we go on, TPHD was detected at a concentration of 340 milligrams per liter in monitoring well RHMWO1 and 2,600 milligrams per liter in monitoring well RHMWO2. The DOH drinking water EAL for human toxicity for TPHD is 190. So imagine it was 2,600 milligrams per liter detected. See how high it exceeded the Department of Health EAL? But then don't jump to a conclusion because the EALs may have been exceeded, but the state has another little trick for you. Oh, but the site-specific RBO is some base level. is what you also need to consider. So that's just one of the quarterly reports that should have been submitted. Here's another. 2005, August 25th. The Department of Health has reviewed the report. First quarter 2005 groundwater sampling dated 2005, prepared by NAFAC Pacific. Please note the document has been placed with the public record. DOH notes that total dissolved lead was detected at concentrations higher than DOH Tier 1 action levels for drinking water, threatened in monitoring wells, right? Analytical results of 12 parts per billion were found versus DOH level of 5.6 parts per billion. All other analyses of the for BTX and PAWS were non-detectable and were below DOH Tier 1 action levels. Please continue the quarterly groundwater monitoring of the existing monitoring wells in the facilities with progress reports sent to this office every 90 days. You don't see anything that says that we cited the government, the Navy, for failure to make its reports, for contaminating the water, or for the leaks. Instead, they circle the wagons and join forces with the Navy to conceal and violate the people. And the sad part about it, Bruce Anderson had part role in this as a director for some while, early on in earlier years, and now he's back. The appointment of Bruce Anderson by David Ige is a shame. It was a lazy effort. When we have this kind of situation breathing down our necks and all, do you want to bring back old school boys who contributed to that? This is, remember now, these are people that were already there, had their shot at it, screwed it up, kept quiet, didn't challenge on the issue of if it was sovereign or not, didn't seek to change the rules to say, well, wait, if our water that we drain from the aquifer to drink and supply the people of this state is threatened with contamination, all cards are on the table. And we're going to play hardcore. We're going to be hard-nosed because this, as the Navy says, is an irreplaceable resource. And forget what the Navy said. Try drinking water that's contaminated and see how long your hair stays on your head. Or how long you, if your ears don't fall off. Some a gross thing. But during the summer and fall of 2008, HDOH, the Hawaii Department of Health, updated their EALs. How about that? They updated them. I mean, a teaspoon of poison is poison, as far as I'm concerned. So I suspect that these EALs, and there's many indications, situations where they just casually and conveniently change the EALs to accommodate and facilitate the Navy at the expense of the people's health and the environment. Listen to this. This is from the Quarterly Groundwater Monitoring Report, Red Hill Fuel Facility, July 2009. During the summer and fall of 2008, HDOA updated their EALs. which resulted in significant changes to the action levels associated with methyl naphthalene. The HDOH drinking water toxicity EAL for these compounds was 240 milligrams per liter. This concentration assumed that methyl naphthalene were not human carcinogens. You see? Listen closely now. I'll repeat that. This concentration assumed that methyl naphthalene were not, plural naphthalenes, I'm sorry, were not human carcinogens. Once evidence emerged and was accepted by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency that methyl naphthalenes are carcinogenic to humans, HDOH adopted more rigorous EALs of 4.7 milligrams per liter. How about that? A more rigorous for methyl naphthalene, 1 and 24 for 2 methyl naphthalene. And that was done in 2008. You see, just the relationship itself is insulting. First, you defer yourself from all the rules, being the Navy. Then you declare that you are sovereign, and the state really don't have any jurisdiction, but you bring them on, you bring them on like he's your they're your nephew or your niece or whatever, and treat them nice and kindly, but really, you won't have any authority or jurisdiction. Only used when we need you. Our waters have been contaminated. Our tanks leak. So therefore, we need a bailout. And that bailout is that we need you to come up with some BS and explain and manipulate and lower or raise the EALs to accommodate us, to keep us from having to take the actions or discontinue the use of the water. I'm not making this up, and I'm not a radical, folks. I can read. I don't have a PhD in any of this. I have a natural resource management arts degree, associate's degree, but I have a formal background in environmental enforcement, law enforcement, and I'm here to tell you that this is an insult. It's a disgrace. And if you think Camp Lejeune is bad, if we were to have the proper monitoring and enforcement, we would probably not be drinking water from that area, that aquifer. Or the military would be held to the fire to clean it up. So, August 6, 2013, Environmental Science International did a study, collected. Laboratory analytical results indicated that TPHD was detected in the groundwater beneath the facility at concentrations that exceeded DOH drinking water EALs for human toxicity. That's one more. And let me show you how insulting this is. Now, I know you're supposed to be cordial, and my folks taught me to be nice to everybody. Don't be mean to anybody. And if you have to, extract yourself from that relationship or that meeting or gathering. Don't be disrespectful. But I got to tell you something here. Of all the things that the failure to disclose, failure to provide the 21 quarters of reports, failure to allow the rules to be changed where there is not sovereignty on the part of the military, in a letter to Rosalind Raylene de la Sala, August 14, 2008, Mr. Stephen Chang wrote, "Thank you very much for the immense effort the Navy and its consultants have put forth on this project. The facility is a unique structure with special needs, and the Navy has addressed these circumstances in an exceptional manner." Really? They've addressed these needs? And then just within the last week to tell us, hey, go screw yourselves. We ain't got no money. We ain't going to spend no money. We're going to go do anything. And then we are now having to go and file legislation to seek and beg for money to address these issues. What causes the state people to want to go out and be so cordial? I know this is a friendly aisle, and I'm not taking issue with that. And I know you got to be nice, nice, kissy, kissy. But I just read you where they've had spills and they've lied and they've talked about changing. Not only are they changing the EALs, but then they tell them the Red Hill facility, the groundwater protection, and the technical analysis, preventive maintenance. I can't understand what it is that make them operate that way. But July 23rd, and I'm just, it wasn't one time that these reports were made, so that's why I'm reading them, and I don't want to sound repetitive, but I want you to see, and they're substantial, the number of reports. So it's not just one, two, or three, but I just thought I would take a few and read to you. So, Red Hill Tank Complex, this is July 23rd, 2013. On April 24th, 2013, they did the testing. The groundwater samples were analyzed for petroleum constituents. Laboratory analytical results indicate all chemical of potential concerns were below the DOH drinking water, EALs, and DOH. Except for DOH groundwater gross contamination, EALs, except for TPHD. TPHD was detected at concentrations of 1,900 milligrams per liter in well number OWD-FMWO1, which was above the DOH EAL of gross contamination of 100. So you got 100 is the level, the quote safe level, a reporting level, but you tested it and it was 1,900. And the DOH EAL for drinking water toxicity is 190. So 1,900. So the purpose of me bringing this out today is to say, be wary of and untrusting of the fact of the Navy and what it says. Because while they may tell you there were no leaks, and they're working on a leak detection, all of that is a smokescreen, folks. The water is contaminated now as I speak to you, and probably in these were 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 years ago these samples were taken. May 7th, 2013, and I just took randomly. I have from 2004, 2002, these reports that we did recover. The groundwater samples were analyzed for petroleum constituents, laboratory. All these reports read the same. It's just that the numbers, concentrations were below the drinking level EALs. But then except for TPHD, TPHD was detected at a concentration of 600 milligrams per liter and a concentration of 1,000 milligrams. Both concentrations were above the DOH EAL for gross contamination of 100. So you got 1,000 detected, the level is 100. Got 600, the level is 100. And the DOHEAL for drinking water toxicity is 190. And who's to say that those numbers won't kill you off, won't cause your immune system to fly off the handle or get out of sync with your body or start working against you or fail to protect? What sets it off? So the DOH, the Department of Health, has a lot of explanations to be handed out. Why were they so carefree? And I told you that they basically got escorted to the prom by the DOH. The prom escort was the DOH, and the chauffeur was the DOH, and the Navy was the teenager who wanted to drink on prom night, so the DOH went and bought him some booze and provided it to them and some smokes. It's the equivalent of that. Turn a blind eye to what their official duties were. And I guess the reward, and this is not to cast aspersion on anybody, but now Mr. Stephen Chang, who was working for the State Health Department, is now working for the Navy in the underground storage tanks around the various military bases in the Navy. He didn't get a job with the Army. He got a job with the Navy. But he was also the guy who had a say in what went down and what did and what they didn't do, if they were going to be charged or if there were violations. Another one here, February 13, 2013. And look at these levels now. TPHD was detected at a concentration of 2,200 milligrams per liter in monitoring well. RHWO2. The DOH drinking water EAL for human toxicity is 190. So once again, 2,200. So I think I've said enough for that. 2012, the same thing was repeated. So basically what I'm saying to you is that the water at Red Hill is contaminated. The debate is, and we see the levels were exceeded by, in their own words, and they reported it. But what's to be done? We're now, when we heard it in 2014, that we're going to put up a detection system and we're going to do all of that and then some more. And yet you heard me read off in 2000, in the 80s and the 60s, they were talking about installing leakage system. They always talk up to the line, always making promises. And you're the little country bumpkins that they're, oh, yeah, you see this thing here? I'm going to sell you this and it'll work for you. You don't have to do anything. And that's what has happened. Some of the local people sold out. They may have degrees, but they didn't have ethics. They may have called themselves doing a good job and serving their government well, but we now have a quagmire. We are stuck. We have contaminated water that we are consuming. And you ask any monkey in a suit, ask them, the first thing they're going to tell you, yeah, but the levels are safe. No. When you set those tanks up there, the level was clean. Now the tanks are there, they're not clean. So anyway, I'm going to come back in the next 5 minutes, take a break, and again, if you have any questions or want to comment, please feel free to call 782-6627. This is the Carol Cox Show, and we'll join you in about five. Aloha. Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. A very good day here in Honolulu. Beautiful weather. Not as cold as some of my relatives are hanging out in now and pulling out the big coats, which is good. Cold weather is good for you. Get you to drink good hot coffee and chocolate and all that good stuff and give you a change of seasons. But again, I want to thank you for joining me. And as I promised, we'd be talking about the Red Hill Oily Waste Facility. And keep in mind, this is a part of a system that complements the Red Hill Fuel Storage Facility. And that is, it's used, this Red Hill Waste Facility is used to process the waste oil and the tar or the heavy oil that is generated by the fuel tanks that are underground. And that material is pumped down to a wastewater and all is pumped to the facility and two tanks there. And one is in a berm ditch area. And I'll just do some reading and share with you the describe it and what have you as we go on. But my attention was first gotten on this subject was I discovered that there was tar oil bubbling out of the ground in the Department of Agriculture parking lot in Halaba. And not knowing much about the area and the activities, I know it's an industrial area, and I know that it's a humane society, the State Department of Agriculture has a quarantine facility there for pets that when you bring them into the state from out of state, and some practices that were going on up there, but we didn't really have any knowledge of what was really going on with the fuse tanks. And in doing so, in doing the research, we found that this facility is a very dangerous facility, and the prior usage of it is nightmarishly frightening. And there's no telling what. But what is insulting is that in the early hour, I talked about the Red Hill tanks and the casual and the lovable, cuddly, warm relationship the State Health Department, who are the regulators of this matter, are closely in bed and making excuses and all kinds of things for the Navy and covering up and failing to take action when the Navy violates or fails to report or what have you. So I want to start off with this oil. Back in 2014, we did a story. I contributed to a story on KGMB, or Hawaii News Now. And thinking that that was something that, hey, it was clear they knew about it, but they weren't not moving their asses to do anything about it. The same lethargic disease that set in on them, on their butts in the Red Hill fuel facility and the reporting and the failure to report and increasing the EALs, environmental action levels, we found it to be even greater in the case of the Red Hill waste off facility pits oily waste pit. So back then I called the state here office, hazardous emergency response office. And they come out and they say they do a, conduct a test, and they do the test, and then they say everything's fine. And that was 2014, and nothing happened. The oil still today, as I speak to you right now, is bubbling out of the ground and oozing. And for some reason, they operate in the mode, if the Navy or a violator calls them up and needing some coverage and some lying and cheating or the cheap way out, they are quite accommodating. But as a person, as a civilian who has a right to know and has a right to complain and see something get done, they frown on that. You become the enemy. You become the troublemaker. So, this occasion, we call the state, the HEER office, that's H-E-E-R office, and I asked them to conduct a sampling of it. Now, mind you, we know that what it is because I had read the files and obtained documents that tell me exactly what it is that's coming out of the ground. And I also have documents that tell me basically who, what, where, and when as it relates to the origin of that material. And what we were met with on this occasion was, well, you don't have anything to prove that, so what we say goes, and you just basically, you're on your own. And they told the media that the material was not contaminated. And they went as far as, it just gets horrible. I want to read you something here. This was taken from a limited phase one environmental sampling, ESA, DOA animal quarantine. Interviews of DOA personnel revealed that the material surfaced approximately 5 years ago. The asphalt paving company was contracted, and the DOA personnel also stated that roofing material was spilled onto the ground during the construction of the DOA. Roofing material, like tar. Well, the state know that it was not tar from roofing. So what they wrote back to me, a sample was taken from the Halaba parking area near the animal quarantine station. The sample was analyzed by gas chromatography and showed the profile of an aged petroleum product. The product was asphalt tar-like, but due to weathering and original composition, could not be determined. It shared the same profile with samples taken from the same area in 2014. I know that. That's why I call you to do this, because I wanted to go and do my own sampling as well. And what I was told is that by the state, we don't get samples written down. They just tell us over the phone verbal, and we don't do that. But we can tell you that it wasn't contaminated. How about that? Figure that one out. Here is the... We do not have lab reports on the samples. The results are given to us verbally and used to roughly determine what substance could be. I hope the information that I was able to forward you was helpful. It was very helpful. And that it compelled me to go and do my own sampling, and the sampling, just for purpose of this conversation, the sampling was done and it came back with the constituents of concern that you've heard me talk about earlier. And it also, we spent $500 with the Advanced Analytical Laboratory, Inc., to just simply to chase this issue, because we believe that it's so important to get beyond the lying and the cover-up on the part of the Department of Health, the Department of Agriculture, and the land was now transferred over to the Department of Land and Natural Resources. So they're layering it, hiding these violations, and yet, meantime, the oil creeps down the parking lot, headed toward the stream, and all they can say is that it's not contaminated. Well, our sampling of the same spot when they went out, you remember now, they said that they don't get their sample results in writing. They just tell them verbally. What bunch of poppycock. So look, the Diesel Range Organics residue oil was 83,000. Milligrams per kilogram, right? Parts per million or whatever. So, 83,000 was the magic number. And here's why. You see, because while they're lying and trying to cover up and ignore and don't want to do anything because it would cost money to clean this up, I knew that I had a document that I recovered that looked at the heavy oil and found that it was 83,000 in their own reports, as well as other contaminants that were found in the contaminated. And so, while telling the media and myself that it was not contaminated, oh, it is contaminated. And they have the records, because from their files, I took the records, get copies of them. A total of 15 borings were, and this was done in April 4th, a study done by Kimura International that was hired by the state and the Navy, or whoever, where the explanation wasn't quite clear. Kimura International was retained by Alpha Engineers to conduct a subsurface investigation at the DOA Animal Quarantine Station, 99941 Halava Valley Road, IL. The purpose of the investigation was to delineate the limits of the tar-like substance found on the vector control parking lot. By delineating the material, the source and date release can be determined. A total of 15 borings were positioned around the subsurface release located at stall 4, 10, and accounting DOA laboratory office and the parking lot. A total of 4 soil samples were collected. A sample of pure tar product was also collected from below the ground and analyzed for TPHD and TPHO and SVOCs of concern. Soil analytical results indicated that the contaminant levels were below the DOH Tier 1 cells. The samples of the product contained TPH at 35,000 parts per million, which is greater than the DOH Tier 1 cell. So, when the states say that it's not contaminated and they didn't get any results and whatever, and it's the same as 2014, I'm saying in 2004, they did a sampling. And so you see the willingness to lie. Now, if I have access to these documents, why wouldn't they make reference or refer to those documents? It would tell them it is contaminated. And the product was predominantly found to be at 8 to 10 feet below ground surface level, indicating that product was released between 1968 and 1969 when the area was being filled up to current levels. So my concern is the reason they don't want to dig that up is it because this was a FUD site, formerly used defense site. And letters that we recovered, one gentleman is stating that we dumped materials in there and the tar materials and the TPH, and it's about 15 feet below the ground because they were filling a swell up, an indentation, a big hole in the ground, basically, a sort of a small valley, and they filled it up. So who knows what materials were dumped in there? Who knows? And this letter described it as being a grassy area, which is the same area in the parking lot area, and he talks about that, and he talks about dumping it, truckloads of it, in the area of this swell that is now holding the material. So when the states say that it's not contaminated, this is their records now. Dimethyl phthalate. The denobenzene, they're exceeding the levels. Diethyl phthalate is 49,000. The reporting level is less than 5.0. Another situation where they found it was 10,000. 100,000 parts per milligrams per liter. And the limit is, the detection limit is 5.0. So you see, the health department is not being truthful. And we're going to continue to pursue this and try and get to the bottom of it, so to speak, because this is potentially impacting the perched water in an aquifer, that the Mauna Loa aquifer or the Manoa aquifer. So who can you trust? It's really discouraging to know that when you call and to tell the state that there is a problem and they look at you like you have a stick in your forehead, and their mode is to, well, he's going to make trouble for us, or we're going to have to do some work or something. And it's, I don't know where to start with these documents, because every time I read one, it tells me that they're lying about something else. And you would never see these documents because they're just not made available to you. There's no way, unless you know what to ask for, and that's what they're banking on. So it really is, I get frustrated just thinking, if you're lying and you're cheating the people, and then finally the people come up with the answers and come back to ask you, well, you know, no problem, we just need to fix this. And you then offer more lies, and then your neck swells, and then you become offensive. So I'm going to read you a letter on the Red Hill Wally Waste Facility. And this is provided by the state to the State Department of Health from the Department of Navy, R.J. Martin, Lieutenant Commander, U.S. Navy, on 19 February 1992. Site name, Oily Waste Disposal Pit, NSC Pearl Harbor. History of site, two disposal pits have been used for the treatment and disposal of oily waste generated from the Red Hill underground storage tanks. The original pit, constructed in 1943, was unlined and received bottom sludges from the cleaning of the bulk storage fuel tanks at the Red Hill. After gravity separation of the water and oil fractions, the water fractions was either evaporated or discharged in the South Lava Stream. Contaminated water, folks, discharged into the stream. Then the oil fraction was reportedly ignited occasionally with other materials such as tires and wood. It was also reported that on occasion discharges of oily water and oil to the stream occurred. In 1948, the pit was excavated to depths beyond any visible oil penetration. So you see, folks, this is an account. Never intended to say this, but it's telling you that they dug down beyond the levels where the oil had percolated down to the water table. To preclude any possibility of contamination of the groundwater, the disposal of oily waste to the pit was discontinued. Thereafter, waste sludges from the storage tanks were hauled to off-site storage facilities in the shipyard. Some discharges of oily water and bulk storage tanks to the stream continued as the site was used to collect and store waste material. In 1972, an asphalt concrete lined pit was constructed in approximately the same location. The pit was used to separate and evaporate the water fraction from the tank sludge. The oily fraction was hauled to the NSC Waste Oil Reclamation Plant. It is suspected that some of the water from the pit was diverted to the stream due to improper valve operations at the pit. Now, to tell you, he admit that they were dumping it in the stream earlier, and now it's based on also incidents of improper operation of the valve. In addition, it was reported that at least two occasions sludge from the pit was dumped into a vegetated area in the vicinity of the pit. The pit was finally taken out of service in 1987. Due to potential contamination identified by the site, inspection conducted under the installation restoration program. The site of oily waste, and these are the concerns, the environmental settings. The site of the oily waste pits is located approximately 2 miles east of the East Lock, West Lock, Pearl Harbor. It is situated 700 feet northwest of Red Hill Freshwater Pump Station, 4,000 feet south of the border water supplies of Lava Shaft, and about 50 feet east of South of Lava Stream. Surface elevation in the vicinity of the site range from approximately 100 to 200 feet above mean sea level, generally sloping down from the site towards South of Lava Stream. The site overlies the groundwater aquifer known as the Mauna Loa Artesian Basin. And yet, you don't hear any outcry, you don't hear any concern about the Red Hill oily waste pits. Yes, hi, welcome to the Carol Cox Show. How are you? We're live on air. We're live on air.
Hi. Right. Oh, I am.
Yes, you are. This is Melody Aduha.
Yeah.
I'm having a discussion on the Orle Pits. You want to join in with me? You have a comment?
Sure. Yes. Yes. The Red Hill Oily Waste Disposal Pit is of interest of the Human Environmental Impacts Committee, and we are working on some legislation to hopefully successfully, finally, excavate and clean up the pit. Apparently, that's been buried since the 1940s. So it's now coming up on the weak spots and highly visible, especially on a hot day.
Mm-hmm. And the file that we're reading speaks specifically to the not only on hot days, but the weight of the material placed in the field, in the landfill, and the tarp, the asphalt pushing down, is creating some kind of unique process of the forces of causing the oil to seep up from pressure. That's what they suspect.
Yes, exactly. So it's already a known environmental risk. And yet, it's not given the proper attention.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very unusual. When you look at that, in addition to other areas that we find of interest, such as the, 5 million gallons of also bunker fuel, in Pearl Harbor area, it is quite egregious. We just can't understand why the proper cleanup isn't done with these two areas.
Yeah,
especially Red Hill.
Yeah, the concern with the Red Hill Oily Waste Facility is that this is a letter I was reading from Lieutenant Commander U.S. Navy R.J. Martin in February 1992, and here's the disturbing part about this. Well, one, he declares that the site overlies the groundwater aquifer known as the Moanalua Artesian Basin, number one. Number two,
yes.
Previous investigations, a 1983 study analyzed the sludge in the lime pit and found elevated concentrations of polynuclear aromatic hydrocarbons, phenols, heavy metals, and volatile hydrocarbons. In 1987, an SI conducted under the IR program identified soil contamination around below the pit. The type of compound detected included petroleum hydrocarbon, semi-volatile. So they were, let me tell you, it's bad.
It's bad.
And it's sitting
it's
over
bad.
The...
It's bad, and full knowledge.
And we have not had any, they've talked about leak detection and what have you. So when do you think the first legislation you've introduced, you will be introducing?
Yes, there's actually two so far, and we'll be working on a third one. But the first one that is already has been submitted to Agriculture and Environmental Senate Chair Mike Gabbard includes the formation of a commission, which right now we're calling it Ecosystem Restoration Commission. And this commission will be looking at all the areas that are of high priority, that is under the jurisdiction of the DOD, the Department of Defense, and identify which areas are in need of cleanup and of any further risk, such as, and including Red Hill, Kohakuloa Training Area, Kaho'olawe Island Reserve, He'i'a, also Training Area, Makua, all these areas which need attention. We are trying to form a commission to make sure that investigation studies are done and that the proper remediation is done.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that one that's...
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Carol. And the second one would be on the oily waste. That one is, I'm still working on it to submit to Senator Gabbard, but he's aware that this one is coming.
Senator Gabbard.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I'm just thinking of that. I don't think it's getting the attention that it needs, and I think the reason that it's not getting the attention, they think it's just an innocuous practice or something that's not threatening, but it sits over the aquifer.
Yes.
And
deep. And some of those documents that you had sent indicates it could be as deep as 30 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we know for sure that when they're doing those bore testings and coming up, that it has gone down to 30 feet, although the pit itself originally had a depth of 14 feet. So it's moving. It's moving.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, thank you for calling in. But I was also reading
thank you, Carol.
Some of the letters. The quarterly reports were just very clear. The contaminants in the water. You know, the debate, there is no contaminants in the water and there is no leaks. In the earlier show, I actually read a file that talked about every leak in every tank up to the 1990s.
Right.
I don't know if you've seen that.
There are a lot. Yeah, it's pretty consistent.
Yeah, so, but to claim that in 1998 was the first one, 2013 was the first reported one, it's like, no.
No, not at all.
So, and so you read a letter from the Navy, and it's like, okay, is this person new to the situation, or is he, but even if he's new, he still need to know. Before he write a letter making certain representations, he should look in the file to see or ask or inquire, right?
Yes.
But just single-handedly write a letter, and then that letter becomes gospel, but having little or nothing to do with the truth. So anyway, well...
Yeah, it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny that they hire third party... does these studies and investigation and then reports back to the Navy, and yet the Navy comes back with its official report, which goes to the Department of Health, which is inconsistent with what their own studies are showing.
Mm-hmm. By the way, go ahead.
No, it appears that if you're going to have the U.S. Navy monitor themselves, basically, then, of course, as an interested party, they're going to make it look like it is not as damning as it actually is. And that's consistent in no matter what it is that they're trying to do.
Yeah, I tried to lay out that same sentiment observation. It's just one thing after the other. Whether it's getting the EALs done, in their favor,
yeah.
Changed, or what? It just the whole thing reeks of political influence.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So, by the way, what is the status of the Navy's stance now? What are they proposing now after the announcement in the paper? What's your take on it?
It appears to me that they're really not doing anything other than what they're already doing. They're just saying that anti-corrosive paint is sufficient and as acceptable, and that the public's calls for double line, this is Board of Water Supply, the Honolulu City Council, the legislature, even Bruce Anderson, Department of Health Chair himself, or Director himself, is saying that these tanks need to be double lined or double walled or relocated, and the Department of Defense is saying basically there is no technology that would allow for double lining. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we need to just use anti-corrosive paint, which is what they've been doing, and basically removing that weak coupons or weak parts of the tank and reinforce it with the same kind of material, the metal that it's already originally built with.
Mm-hmm.
So basically they're saying, we are upgrading our monitoring system, 24 hours, security, all of that. But the problem with that is that it is only going to note a detection. It'll say, yes, a leak had happened. And yet what they're not doing, what the Department of Defense is not doing, is the precautionary measure that would stop a leak from happening, that would prevent a leak from happening. So they're looking at it from a different perspective and saying, hey, this is just as good, which in reality it is not, by far just as good.
And the Navy admits in one of its reports that it's deferred the UST from the rules. It really don't have to abide by the state rules.
I don't know how they're getting that that kind of interpretation. As we learned under the, what is that, agreement of consent, that they have until 1937 to either double wall or relocate those tanks. Mm-hmm. And their last report, September 9th, 2019, indicated that they need more time. They need up to 2045 in order to comply with the administrative order of consent.
Mm-hmm.
So that in and of itself, they're asking for an extension so that they can breach the original administrative order of consent.
And it won't just, they don't really want to be responsible for anything that they've done. They being the Navy.
Yes.
And I don't think that the state has been honest either about this whole thing. In the Red Hill Fuel Storage Facility Groundwater Protection Plan of January 2008, here's what they said, for example, the Navy. Although the facility, the facility USTs are deferred from any, from many of the state and federal regulations, including the requirement for release detection, HAR 2, Title 11, Chapter 281, Subchapter 5, quote, release detection, end quote. Deployment of a reliable leak detection system would reduce the potential for a chronic release to the Red Hill subbasin. The impact of the future chronic release of fuel over a prolonged period of time would eliminate blah, blah, blah. See, so that's a hurdle right there. No one is, how can they be deferred?
Right.
So all things said and done, they don't have any obligation in it legally. So maybe we need to figure out if that law has changed. But I'm sure they didn't voluntarily change that law.
Right.
Is that a surprise to you, or?
It's very, very surprising.
I posted this on the website, carolcox.com. It's
okay.
I did it because they claimed that the first leak was in 2014, and then they said, well, 1998 was the first one, but. I gave all 20 tanks a report from this fuel tank. It identifies all the leaks. Well, I shouldn't say all, the ones that they reported.
Right.
Or detected.
Exactly. Right. Oh, no, those leaks, I don't remember, but there was that huge leak of, out of memory, 1.2 million gallons.
1.2 million, that's the oil and waste facility.
Yeah, wasn't that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yes.
never talked about that. And yet the health department, in their investigation and response to me, never mentioned anything other than it was possibly a roofing material.
Right.
And that was just through interviewing people. But they knew, they got letters, as I've shared with you, where people are saying, we dumped it out there, and this is what happened. So anyway.
So it's amazing that even with a very recent inquiry that I had made, that was the response back from the Department of Health, was that it was roofing material.
It was such a lame response. They should never have even repeated that.
Right.
But that's what they do. I don't know why they do it, but yeah. But anyway, we'll try and get to the bottom of it, so to speak.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Thank you very much, Carol.
All righty.
Thank you for this opportunity to be on your show.
Yeah.
And I will get back to working on the oily waste disposal pit. It's just amazing. You know, when you look at all these other things where you've got the KEI having their protection of the INA, and you think, okay, Mauna Kea, you think Sherwood Forest, you think Kahuku, and then there's Red Hill, which it's no longer a preventative. It's there. We need to get rid of it. And so I think the public needs to really be made aware, and attention needs to be put forth so that we do have that kind of kapu aloha also with Red Hill.
Or I think the kapu aloha is great, and I'm fascinated with watching it in motion. But there's going to take some prosecution, because there's some relationships here where there's just people outright lying. And it's going to take maybe a visit to Ed Case's office, who declares that the military claims it's sovereign, yet he's representing us. How can he represent us in that fashion fairly if he subscribed to that the military is sovereign while it's polluting?
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
And conflict. Then while we're talking to him, we should get him to get the attention of his sister. Did you see the recent story? And I'm jumping rails now. In Maui, the Wailuku River, they're installing a fish ladder, quote, fish ladder. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
And killed killed a large number of oopu or fish or whatever other species in there.
Right. Right.
And her
There's argument that's going to be made this week before the U.S. Supreme Court regarding Maui's situation. I believe David Henkin is going to make the argument. So, yeah.
Okay.
So that should be good. Okay, Carol. Thanks again.
All righty. Well, thank you.
Okay. Right. Take
Aloha.
Care. Aloha. Bye-bye.
But, hey, this is not a show per se. We call it a show, but we're trying to get the information out to you. But thank you for joining in on the and listening in on the conversation of the Red Hill subject. And just in closing, it's disturbing. Go to Carol Cox, Facebook, Carol Cox, and we posted up a story there where the State Department of Land and Natural Resources, either its officers or somebody involved with them, were posting pictures of people that they had issued citations to, yet the cases had not been adjudicated, and you're innocent until proven guilty. as well as this process serves only to shame people. And we don't need that kind of behavior. So if you want to go to Carol Cox Facebook, look at it, and we're going to make a link there on the Carol Cox Show. And but in closing, as I was starting to talk, the project Help Oopu Fish Instead kills hundreds of them. That's the headlines, the topic for the Star Saturday Star Advertiser. And in closing, one of the saddest things there were, this, you heard me say that the Wailuku River was having water diverted so that they could install a fish ladder in some portions of it. Now, Suzanne Case made a statement that, quote, "It is obviously ironic that our project to improve stream habitat for Oopu appears to have resulted in loss of hundreds of fish," end quote. DLNR chairwoman Suzanne Case in a statement, "We regret the situation and express our sincere apologies to the Wailuku River community for these events." How can she petition? How about she apologize to the people of the state for being so dang dumb and unable to see and prepare? And this is not, there's no irony in this discussion or this behavior. This is complete failure. And giving us an example of what she really is. If it's getting money, getting grants, and getting money to her friends and hiring her friends and fixing things up for the big money folks with deep pockets, she's good at that. But when it comes to resources, and all along, when I read this article, it just went through me as if, why are we tolerating? David Ige has done so much harm to the structure of Hawaii by appointing people that are inept, that have no clue, and is unapologetic to their behavior and tolerance for whether it's DLNR officers, the way they behave, using jet skis, using abusing their authority on security passes, using scramblers in the GPS systems, working in the commercial fishing industry or working in a commercial recreation water-based sports while serving in the capacity of law enforcement, on and on and on. And all she could come up with was irony. No, it was failure to prepare. But what that tells me is that all that I've been speaking about in the past few years during her tenure is coming to pass now. She has gutted and caused the complete removal of any seasoned biologist in the aquatics business. She has picked and appointed mostly white males and mostly white females to carry out her, quote, philosophy toward the resources. Now, any fool would have known that you, if you're going to do a fish ladder, or if you're going to divert the water, you got to think about that. But if you got all teeny boppers and people that have gotten in through the back doors employed without having any expertise, you're likely to see this in the dying of Oopu and all. So, maybe harsh comments, but how much can we tolerate? Mauna Kea, Kahuku, all of these things. And then now here's a shaming effort practiced to put people, post their pictures on the website, on an Instagram site and shamed them because they were accused of, hadn't been found guilty. But even if they were found guilty, what would be the purpose of putting up a website to put people on that have been cited or found to be in violation? Is that what the Suzanne case? And if she wants to put a picture up of someone, let's put up the picture of the people that got the water rights that going to benefit or cause the need to have that water diverted or what have you. That's a take. I mean, inexcusable. And who checked the plans for that anyway? To say, well, if the water dries up, what are we going to do? Do we have a valve or a gate that we're going to lift quickly? Or how are we going to continue to keep water? You let them, you build a ladder, but then there's no water on the other side of the wall. So, folks, we have a problem with, and David Ige may be the most honest person on the planet, but he is the most difficult person to understand as far as management and his choice of people. But anyway, we'll survive it, but we'll at a great loss. Whether it's that, and it just seems that state lands is for profit. The people, the native people, I'm finding what just is quite offensive with a lot of this stuff is that the DLNR, for example, Parks and Recreation out at Sand Island, rents to the air conditioner business that for the cold water, rent land to this company to store its pipe and staging ground. That company then take pipes from Colusio Brothers or the company they've told us and allow them to store it. So you take that out of there and it was about $40 a month for the lease. They're not managing to get the best bang for your buck. It's about giving friends benefit in the using public resources for cheap. So, no, it's not ironic. It is telling that Suzanne Case is over her head, in over her head with this so-called chairperson, chairwoman of the natural resources. Thank you for joining me, and I will be back with you next week. And you can listen to pre-recorded and recorded shows at carolcox.com or talk808.com. We're going to be posting on Friday evenings now. So tune in, talk808.com. Aloha.